First you flick this switch, then this switch. That activates it. Then you push this button, which will give you 5 minutes to get out of there. Now, whatever you do, don't push this button, because that will set off the bomb immediately and we'll all be dead. Now, repeat back what I just said.
I'm Groot.
Uh-huh.
I'm Groot.
That's right.
I'm Groot.
No! Now that's the button that will kill everyone! Try again.
I'm Groot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Groot.
Uh-huh.
I'm Groot.
No! That's exactly what you just said! How is that even possible? Which button is the button you're supposed to push? Point to it!
We bring you this special radio television broadcast in order to give you the very latest information on an amazing phenomenon. Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen, I think something is happening.
Good evening. I hope you'll excuse me if I appear a trifle excited.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs.
Whatever appears emerges as raw experience for those who watch it.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Sword Cinema Podcast, GoombaStomp.com's flagship movie podcast. I am your temporary lead host, Patrick Murphy. Simon Howell is out this week. I take it he did not want to see the movie that we're going to be doing right now. But with me, as always, is Ricky D.
What a surprise. Simon takes a week off when we have to review a Marvel movie.
Such an elitist.
It's a little too coincidental, I think. But I guess that he probably was busy at the time. He expressed some disdain for this, didn't he?
He's actually moving, but no, he's not a big fan of superhero movies.
Oh, all right. Well, joining us also is Goomba Stomp's TV editor, Randy Dankovich. Randy, are you a fan of Marvel movies?
No comment.
That does not bode well for this conversation. All right. And also with us is one of Goomba Stomp's writers, Andrew Tabalbag. Andrew, what about you? Somebody please save this. Say that Marvel has produced something good.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge fan of the Marvel movies. I've seen almost all of them, so.
Oh, all right. Excellent.
Wait a minute, Patrick. I'm a fan of Marvel movies.
Are you? Okay. I thought you were kind of like on the fence like me. Some of them good, some of them bad. Not really a fan of Marvel itself, but just a fan of, the ones they do right.
Well, I actually grew up reading DC comics. I've only read a bit of Marvel, but I think their batting average is pretty high. Like, I think for every, three good movies, there is one bad movie.
Oh, okay. All right. That's pretty good. That's a little on the higher end from my side, but I'm more like a 50-50. Anyway, if you haven't figured it out today, we are discussing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So let's hear a clip from that really fast.
So, here we are. A thief, one thug, an angry little tree, an evil stepsister, a pirate, an assassin, and most importantly, me.
You are insufferable. The Guardians must be destroyed.
Son of a...
Yeah.
That's a really bad sign.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, rated PG-13. Tickets still available.
Okay, guys, that was a clip from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, written and directed by James Gunn, starring Chris Pratt, Kurt Russell, Zoe Saldana, and a bunch of other people who either provide voices or have colored faces. All right. So, Rick, let's just jump right into it. Let's start you off. For the first part of this conversation is going to be non-spoiler. And in the second half of this show, we're going to go into spoilers. But for now, Rick, what was your general impression of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
My problem with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is my problem with most Marvel movies. It's too big for no reason. Like, there's no reason for the plot to be this confusing. There's no reason to have a supervillain with such outrageous powers that affects not just the planet and or the characters, but the entire universe. I feel like it tries too hard to create a plot that nobody really cares about, and it relies purely on a MacGuffin. Now, to be fair, I do like this movie enough to recommend it, but that's because I'm comparing it to most Hollywood blockbusters, and I'm not a big fan of Hollywood blockbusters. I'm more of an indie film guy, or I love my foreign films, But, you know, like, I'm good with seeing a Hollywood blockbuster on the big screen, go out with the family and or friends and have a good time. It's more like a night out, you know, and then afterwards, like, go for some coffee and or beer and talk about the movie. But like most Marvel films, it tries too hard to go big. And I don't know, man, like, I kind of felt like I just did not care about the actual plot of this film. What I do like about this movie, which is I think you're all going to agree, is the actual characters. But once again, Patrick, when we get into the third act, it loses focus on what makes this movie so great, and that is the characters. And anytime we get one of these big action scenes, I just really did not care because it feels like there's no stakes. I mean, yes, there is one character who does die in this movie, and sadly, it's, I think, like the most interesting character in the film. But the problem with him dying is they try to make you care. They try hard for that sentimental like moment. But the problem is, like, 30 minutes earlier, we saw this very same character, like, assassinate 50 people who used to be his, like, colleagues in what is essentially, like, a 10-minute jokey sort of, like, action scene that resembles a music video because the whole thing is choreographed and edited to, like, a song, like, specifically to match the beat and the chorus of that specific song that they choose. And that is, like, the problem with these movies, specifically this movie. Like, its approach to life and death seems odd. Like, it seems out of sync, especially towards the end of the film. I never really felt like any of the main cast was in any danger. And, I mean, you can say that for just about any superhero movie, right? Like, you don't walk into Guardians of the Galaxy thinking that Star-Lord's gonna die. But they do this thing in a lot of, like, comic book movies that I really hate. And I remember they did it in Green Lantern, and it drove me bonkers. So, like, you have this movie that focuses on this squad of, like, superheroes, right? Or anti-heroes. And at about, like, the two-hour mark, we get these random cutscenes to, like, people on Earth running away from some sort of earthquake slash tornado. Like, we have no idea who these people are. Like, it feels like such a disconnect, you know what I mean? And this is what I mean about how I don't understand why the villain needs to have this plot to destroy the whole entire universe. Why can't they just simplify things? Because the best thing about this movie is the scenes in which it actually doesn't focus on these grand bombastic action scenes, but focuses on these characters who we all tend to love. So there's a lot of casualties and a huge body count, but it means little. And it's not like watching John Wick. It's like, because John Wick is like, I mean, John Wick probably has like a higher body count and people actually do die and there's tons of blood and it's a violent film. I think it's got him like an R rating, right? But it's like I feel like, I'm not even entirely sure if it's James Gunn to blame and or, you know, maybe too many cooks in the kitchen and or he's answering to like some studio heads. But it kind of felt like there was this push and pull between what James Gunn really wanted to do, like his vision, right? And for some reason, they always feel they need this bigger threat and you don't really need it. So I'm a little divisive on the film. I think it's good enough to recommend, but yeah, man, like in terms of like the plot, it's a complete mess to the point where like there's so much role swapping in this film. Like characters switch sides at a flip of a dime, like every scene. It's just kind of like a mess.
Yeah, I think they did not do a good job of figuring out what the focus of this was, whether it was supposed to be the save the universe thing or actually a more personal story. And as a result, that kind of mirrored with the violence, because you're right, there is a massive body count. I think it actually goes more than John Wick, although they're not as violent. They're definitely more stylized, but there are so many dead bodies in this. They could have either just gone, you know, hey, look, we don't care. We're going to kill a bunch of people and it doesn't matter. But then they try to do sentimental stuff. So I don't know, how should we feel about all these bodies, but then, you know, that you don't seem to care about, but yet then you want us to care about other things, you know, life and in general, and these, you know, these people's feelings. I don't know. It doesn't really work very well. Randy, what did you think?
Well, I think this movie can be summed up by its own soundtrack and how it uses it. It kind of encapsulates everything I feel about the film. You know, it's not only is the soundtrack an attempt to cheaply imitate the first film, but the music that's used is like barely tangentially connected to anything that's established in this world or with its people. And it, you know, there's really no sort of this movie goes big on the emotional moments, but there's really no sort of resonance to any of it because it all just feels like such an exercise in patting oneself on the back, like, oh, look how cool we are for doing this sequence with an arrow and a whistler, and look how big our heart is because we have this big sentimental ending in this third act, and oh, but we're also really cool and we know how to spend a shitload of money, so here's a bunch of confusing space scenes that have fancy imagery that really doesn't make any sense or have any bearing on anything whatsoever in the end. I kind of walked away from this movie feeling like I had just watched something that was very painstakingly and lovingly put together, but it was so infatuated with itself that it was just completely hollow.
Wouldn't you say that two words to describe this movie would be flimsy and artificial?
I would say that would describe the last movie, too. It's funny that you guys bring up that you both brought up the arrow scene, and we won't get too much into spoilers here, but that was actually my favorite scene from the movie. And I think if you're going to do a movie like this, you've got to go all out and make the whole movie like that, where it's just nothing but stylized action.
But then
and that was
just,
actually the action scene.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think when you do that, you run it. That movie, that scene, every single superhero movie has one now. Ever since the Quicksilver scene in Days of Future Past, like every movie has had to have that one signature scene with the big slowdown. And that once they kicked in with this movie, I was like, all right, well, I can just fucking cancel the next 3 minutes for doing anything with my life because this is what it's going to be. And these movies have like these tentpole films have like relied on these things now, and I think ultimately they're very disappointing. I mean, it's a fucking dude with a whistle and an arrow, like not really that interesting of a character and not one I'd want. I think the movie's a big centerpiece should be around.
I know Andrew's got to talk, but I'm going to kind of disagree with you because he's actually my favorite character, Yondu, played by Michael Rooker. He's like this blue-skinned mercenary with a magic mohawk, and I like his weapon of choice. Like, I like the fact that he has this magic arrow that he can control by whistling.
I find him so lame.
I really like his character. The problem with his character is that they don't really develop his character in interesting ways. Like, I think Michael Rooker does a good enough job in the role, but like, his whole entire crew, like his colleagues, turn on him. Like there's a mutiny. And then later on, we get this prison escape, which is a nice operatic action sequence that kind of like reminiscent of, like, I think you mentioned, like the X-Men scene, right? With Quicksilver, it's beautifully edited and it reminds me of something like you would see in like Legion. It's got an interesting soundtrack.
There's colorful trails.
Exactly. But the problem is, it's like we get the scene with Yondu and Sylvester Stallone's character. We get this like scene between him and Sly's character. I'm not even sure who Sylvester Stallone's supposed to be in this movie.
Sylvester Stallone? Judge right. Dredd? Who knows?
Judge Dredd.
Right. And this is what I mean. I'm like, I'm not entirely sure what to feel for this character. It's like, at times, I kind of feel like the screenplay writer and the director want me to care about this character so much. And at times, it kind of feels like they don't even care about this character enough to develop him. They're just interested in this one action scene. But then we get this big, huge funeral at the end, which I'll admit it was kind of beautiful watching fireworks, but I could not feel whatever they wanted me to feel, like that sentimental attachment to this character who it feels like schizophrenic. Like the writing of this character feels schizophrenic.
Would a small-time mercenary get a huge military send-off like that after an unceremonious death like this?
It wasn't a military.
It was equivalent of one. You know.
Yeah, it was like a guild of mercenaries. I don't know. I don't know anything.
Quiver of mercenaries to stick with the arrow theme.
Exactly. All right.
Andrew, tell us you love this movie.
Oh, man. Unfortunately, I can't do that. I did not love this movie. I mean, I think the biggest thing that ruined it for me was the fact that I enjoyed the first one so much. I'm not sure if you guys agree with me here, but I thought the first one was amazing. It did everything that the second movie tried to do, but it did it successfully. So most of the things that Rick was saying about this one, like it tries to do too much at once and it tried to go big. I agree with that with the first one also, but at the same time, it all made sense and it all came together, right? With each of the individual characters getting developed. I mean, it jumped around a lot, but it all eventually came together at the end. And that last piece was definitely not present in the second one whatsoever. Like it does try to be like a jack of all trades, master of none kind of movie. It tries to hit everything. And I think the only thing that made it tolerable for me was like Drax and his humor. You know, his character, it's very entertaining and you get a laugh out of it, and it's kind of like, for me, it was kind of like a reset on the whole I'm lost thing because I got a laugh out of it. but there really wasn't much to get me through it, especially since I had such high expectations from the first one. I mean, it's all over the place. And also, especially since, you know, Marvel's getting into phase three now, it doesn't contribute to the overarching story at all either. So I didn't see the point of the movie at all.
Between the four of us, who do you think likes this movie the least so far, based on our like 10 to 15 minute conversation here? Like, I'm guessing it's Patrick.
Well, the thing is, I didn't hate this movie. I'm guessing it's Randy, because there are actually elements of it I like. I'm okay with this movie, like you, Rick. I think it's not a terrible movie if somebody just wants to go spend 2 hours and 15 minutes of their time staring, you know, at some pretty pictures and
or dancing tree.
Yeah, and dancing tree and have some good laughs, which that was the best scene in the movie.
Because I have a question, okay? Because the thing is, like, I got a feel for James Gunn. First of all, I'm a huge fan of James Gunn. I've actually met James Gunn in real life at the Toronto Film Festival. He's a super, super nice guy, really down to earth. He knows his movies. I love Slither. You know, I also like Super. I love the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. But I kind of feel for him because there's a lot of pressure on James Gunn to come in and do a sequel and not necessarily replicate everything from the first movie, but also at the same time replicate everything from the first movie, because that's what people want. And that means tone, it means style, it means the pacing, it means the visual razzle-dazzle, it means the editing, it means the soundtrack. And I kind of feel like that would have worked had he not had to have included all of these characters to set up the next 16 Marvel films. And this is my problem with Marvel in general, because, and I'm not just talking about the post-credit sequences. I have no problem with the post-credit sequence, because at this point, it's sort of like a thing that Marvel does. You know, you don't have to stick around and watch them. If you don't like them, just leave the theater. It's not a big deal, right? But even within the movie, like, I feel like the movie is too busy setting up the next 16 Marvel films to the point where, like, this movie, for example, really focuses on family. Like, it's so similar to the Fast and Furious franchise at this point, to the point where they even decided to cast Kurt Russell in this movie, okay? But there's the whole movie is really about these characters, this dysfunctional group of misfits who are really not just friends, but family. I think there's even a line in the movie in which someone says that. I think it's Drax, right?
Drax says that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but then, like, we have, like, all of these characters who pop up because they're setting up future movies. Like, we have Nebula and her sister, and we have a lot of talk and mention of Thanos, right? And he's going to play, like, a major part, if not in the next movie, then in some movie, I don't know what. We get Sylvester Stallone's character walk in. You know, we get a lot of stuff that we just do not need.
Well, I think the Nebula, I mean, it's poorly executed, but I think the Nebula Gamora material is like really the only thing in this movie that has any like real weight to it. I mean, it tries to focus on this whole father son dynamic that is just completely absent. But I think if there's one thing this movie at least attempts to do with the group as a whole, but specifically with these two sisters, is it tries to be a little more thematically complex with the relationships of these people and the kind of struggles they're going through as they try and find their place in this, you know, this new universe isn't the word I'm looking for, this new baseline they've established for their lives.
Does it really try, Randy? Like, seriously, like,
five-minute scene that's just Gamora and Nebula talking to each other about their problems with each other. I think if there's one thing that this movie actually tries to do is with that. I'm not saying it executes it very well, but I think this movie, if there's one thing it does, it isolates itself from the rest of the Marvel universe in a number of meaningful ways. There's no major Avengers character that shows up here. There's really, even when these two, you know, the Nebula and Gamora are talking, they don't even mention Thanos, who is their father and the person who has kind of kicked this, you know, sub-franchise into gear.
No,
so
I think there's one criticism we can alleviate out of this,
that it's isolated.
They mentioned Thanos like 16 times, and that's the point. Like, I felt like they could have, like, that whole storyline could have been a movie in itself. Like, they're dealing with some serious issues, like physical, mental abuse by their dad in like the worst way possible. That is a dark, depressing comic book movie in itself. And instead, I felt like their scenes were there just to address the big baddie in the next movie. That's what I honestly felt. Like, I felt they didn't really care for these two characters. They just wanted to mention Thanos like 16 times while they have their like little sister fit going on. I mean, this is what I mean. I'm like, did they really try? Like, we see it present in the film. We see them sort of addressing these issues, but I feel like they're dancing around it. And the same goes with like I mean, the whole daddy issues across the board. I think if anything, they did a better job with the daddy issues that Star-Lord has, because we do get to meet Ego, his dad, played by Kurt Russell. And we do sort of have, I would say, a nice bonding moment towards the end of the film between him and Yondu, who sort of, he was the adopted son of Yondu, right? If I'm not mistaken, I can't really remember the first movie too well.
Sort of.
Yeah,
sort
kind of, in a way.
Right. And so I thought, at least with that family dynamic, they did somewhat of a better job, and they actually cared about addressing these issues and developing these characters and fleshing out the relationships between the three of them, not to mention Star-Lord's, like, mom and how she died. You know, she had cancer and a brain tumor, etc.
No. Ego gave her fucking brain cancer. Exactly. Let's make sure we state that correctly.
And, so fuck that I had a character. Big problem. That was stupid, because there was absolutely no motivation for him to really do that. I know he came up with this whole, oh, if she was still alive, I'd feel tempted to go back to Earth or something. But I mean, that was purely to make him the villain. And then they stripped away all complexity from his character when they did that.
Well, also the fact that he has been going around propagating himself as a species and then going around murdering his own children when he's not satisfied with them. But they kind of all sneak that into like one sentence at the end.
Yeah.
That's what I hate about the movie as a whole, is that it tries to push too much into it. Like, not even just with the characters and how they turned him into the villain at the end, but like the whole father-son dynamic was supposed to be this huge recurring theme, but they don't do that well because they're trying to do it in like six different places. It's like they don't execute the whole Peter Quill and Ego dynamic because they're also half focusing on like Rocket and how he's mad at the world for creating him and he didn't ask to be created. And then there's also Gamora and her sister and Thanos. And then you have all of these different characters, each with their own emotional issues, and in one movie you can only go so deep with that many at once, so it ends up with not a single one of them being done well enough. I guess
it also doesn't help that the character at the center, I think this might be the biggest issue with the movie. While I'm perfectly fine with Chris Pratt being a device of comedy, you know, it's what he was great at Parks and Rec and it's what he's great at on these films. But anytime this guy has to share a scene with another human being, it's just empty. It's empty. And I think that is like at the heart of this film is the real issue, is that the relationship between Ego and Star-Lord just feels like a fucking vast nothing. And I think it speaks to the performative issues. And it's not that he's not the only character, he's not the only actor in this movie that has issues with his performance. But I think that it's a lot of why this movie rings hollow, is just because whenever you put Star-Lord in a room with another human being, he just becomes a cipher for whatever conversation's going on. You know, this Star-Lord is not the Star-Lord that was in the first movie, giving the finger to the police that arrest him and running around stealing shit. This is a guy who is basically just seems to be in every scene to appease everyone. And even at that simple task, Chris Pratt really isn't up to delivering the kind of emotional connection we need for this arc to work. And I think that's why this movie falls apart.
Yeah, well, I think there's a problem when, in my opinion, the main character and the leader of this squad is like the most boring character in the movie. And I think there's also a problem when the most fascinating, interesting, lovable, and charming characters are the animated characters. And I'm not just talking about Baby Groot, but I'm talking about Rocket. Like, there's something about the characterization of these, of those two characters, like the animation, their facial expressions, like the way they create these characters, they show more of an emotional range than some of the actors in this film. And I know some of the actors are hiding behind makeup, but Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper are not even hiding. They're just like providing voice work for these characters. And they seem to do a better job with Groot and Rocket Raccoon than some of these side characters. I mean, who the hell is Mantis and why do we care about her? And why did she not like warn them as soon as they stepped on Ego's planet? Why did she wait like 45 minutes to decide that she wants to work? I'm confused.
Why
about
can she put the most powerful villain we've ever met to fucking sleep every night? What is she, a professional lullaby reader? Like, what is her? Like, I think you raise a great point. Who the fuck is this character? Like, they're introduced. Like, yep, she puts the bad guy to sleep. Don't mention that. Don't talk about it. It's not something that's important. We promise.
There's a reason that she's there, and it's because everybody in this movie was paired off with somebody. So they didn't have a pair for Drax, and they had to have a pair for Drax. That's really bottom line in the screenplay, why she exists. There is no other reason. Rocket got paired with Yondu. You know, obviously, Star-Lord gets paired with his dad, and Gamora is paired with her sister. Everybody else is doing something. You know, other Baby Groot doesn't need appearing off because, I don't know, he's just kind of like floating through this movie. But yeah, everybody is paired off with somebody. Drax needed somebody to, and she's just as naive as kind of as he is, I don't know, an id. They both kind of are that way. They just say exactly what's on their minds. So they kind of, that was the sense behind that, I guess. And they even try to squeeze a couple emotional moments out of them. To Andrew's point, they really go way too far trying to make everybody have a moment, a serious moment. And this is supposed to be just a jerk-off movie. Like, it's all supposed to be sarcastic. Does there really need to be any sentimentality in a Guardians of the Galaxy movie? Really?
I don't think so.
A Rocket Raccoon has a heart.
Yeah, I guess so. He's a wounded animal, right?
Yeah, but even the sentimentality was just so half-assed. Like, the scene where Peter's playing catch with little ball of light with his dad, I think I cringed so hard when I saw that scene. I was like, my God, am I supposed to cry right here? Because I couldn't... Oh,
I kind of feel like James Gunn did that scene on purpose. Like, I think he knows how corny it is, and I think that's the idea. It just didn't... Like, the execution was just wrong. And I do like how they do humanize Drax to some degree, but I agree with you, Patrick and Andrew. Like, they're trying to cram too much into like what is, I think, a 2-hour movie. And I think the main problem is because you have a group of like 5 or 6 characters. Is there 5 or 6? Anyhow, you have this group, right? The Guardians of the Galaxy, and they decide to split them up throughout the whole entire film. And so I think that's sort of like a mistake in terms of like how they wrote the movie, like in terms of like the screenplay. Because as soon as you take away Rocket and Groot away from like Star-Lord becomes really boring. And same goes for like Nebula. And Drax isn't the same. He doesn't have like that, I don't know. It's just not the same. And I think that's why the first movie works so well, because they're all on screen at the same time. They're always at the same place at the same time, or for most of the movie. And for most of the running time in this film, they're split apart. And I think that was a mistake on the part of the screenplay writer. I still do think that James Gunn does a fantastic job in directing this screenplay. Like, I think if you had given this movie to someone like Zack Snyder, it would probably be one of the worst movies we've ever seen.
That's very possible.
Is Zack Snyder's slow camera pans any worse than Gunn's half-assed use of your dad's folk music soundtrack in this movie?
That fits the character, though.
I'm not here defending Zack Snyder. Let me state that in the preface.
Take, for instance, the first scene, the opening scene. Now, to be fair, it is a credit sequence, right? And so he finds an interesting way to have Groot dance around while the credits are rolling and have this huge battle with some space slug in the background, right? This giant blob fighting Guardians of the Galaxy. And I think that was kind of like cool. And that's why when the movie started, I was sort of like really, really optimistic. I'm like, oh, James Gunn is actually going to comment on action movies and the Marvel Universe and video games, right? Like, he's actually going to have something interesting to say about how, you know, the typical criticism you hear nowadays when you read or when you talk to someone about a blockbuster and or read a film review is their opinion that the action scenes feel like a video game, right? And we get this scene in which they land on a planet and everyone thinks that they're like pitch perfect, and it's like, it looks like a scene from like Goldfinger or something. Like, they're all like dressed in gold, and I can't remember the name of those.
The Sovereign, right?
And
the Pointless.
And then, but we get this like really, I thought it was actually really cool. Like, we get the scene which is reminiscent of video games, where they themselves are playing a video game where they're trying to attack the Guardians of the Galaxy, who are escaping after Rocket steals their like batteries, which I don't really understand why. But they're controlling these spacecrafts. So they're not even in the spacecrafts. Like, in terms of like piloting the spacecraft, they're controlling it just like you would a video game. And I was all excited. I'm like, oh my God, maybe James Gunn is going to find some way to throw in some interesting commentary on the video game industry and tie it into like blockbusters and or something. And all we get is we get a cameo of Pac-Man at the end of the film.
Or it's just tacit appreciation of the United States, you know, drone program. You can read it either way.
I definitely thought this was a video game thing. They were almost in an arcade, just having fun.
They even crowded around the last guy because he was still alive. And then when it got destroyed, like, what, somebody said, "You suck," and everybody walked away? That's literally how it works in an arcade.
That's right. It was like he was going for the high score or something, and he blew it.
This is weird. We've got a Sovereign fleet approaching from the rear.
Why would they do that?
Probably because Rocket stole some of their batteries.
Dude!
Right. He didn't steal some of those. I don't know why they're after us. What a mystery this is.
What were you thinking?
Dude, they were really easy to steal.
That's your defense?
Come on. You saw how that high priestess talked down to us. Now I'm teaching her a lesson.
I didn't realize your motivation was altruism. It's really a shame the Sovereign have mistaken your intentions and are trying to kill us.
Exactly.
I was being sarcastic.
Oh, no, you're supposed to use a sarcastic voice. Now I look foolish.
Can we put the bickering on hold until after we survive this massive space battle?
War incoming.
Good. I'm going to kill some guys.
The Sovereign is another one of the problems in this movie. They would have worked well if they were just one of those, you know, sort of Indiana Jones style prologues to a story. They didn't, you know, and didn't continue on to be another villain, because one of the things this movie does, again, Marvel movies tend to do this ever since Spider-Man 3, this has been a problem really, is having too many villains in a story. You've got the Sovereign, you've got the Ravagers, at least the mutinous ones, and then you've also got Ego. It's too much stuff, and then maybe
Nebula.
Gamora's sister too. She's kind of a villain, kind of a, I don't know what she is. So yeah. There's too many things going on, or too many clashes, too many antagonists to really ever get a bead or make any one of these struggles really count.
You know what the biggest problem with this movie is? Like, we've mentioned a lot of problems, but I think the biggest problem with this movie is, for something that works more so as a comedy, I felt like the timing, like the comic timing, was completely off and off sync by like a second or two, to the point where I can tell what joke was coming up next. And so therefore it was never really funny. The first movie didn't have that problem. Like, I actually think that the first movie is funny and the comic timing is spot on. In this film, I don't know if it's a problem with the delivery. Like, do you blame the actors and or the director directing the actors, and or is it the editing process? But it felt like everything was off sync.
Well, I feel like there's two issues there. One of them, I think they're just the way they constructed jokes in this movie was kind of atypical. Like, they were more designed, like, a lot of them felt like opening scenes to, say, Brooklyn Nine-Nine or Parks and Rec or something like that, where the joke is kind of disjointed from the scene or the setting itself, and it's just kind of like a random observation that is left without, you know, without a music cue or... In this case, we're not talking about sitcoms, so we're not going to have laughter cues, but some kind of signifier that this is the punchline of your joke, and then they just kind of let it go. But I also think part of it is the repetition for which they use punchlines. Like, we can all agree that when Drax laughs, it's a funny thing, but that movie tries to derive that as a punchline probably a dozen times throughout the film, as does it the same thing with the appearance of Baby Groot, which I think... a discussion around that character may turn out to be the hottest debate of them all, if the internet in the last 48 hours has been any guess. Because I think when we're talking about the comedic timing of this movie being poor, I think it's reliance on repetitive devices to deliver that.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I did laugh at this movie at least a fair amount. In fact, the humor is what got me through this, because the action... minus that one magic arrow scene, which I did actually really like as just a piece of choreography. Other than that, the humor is kind of what got me through this. I kind of wish that they just sort of, you know, got rid of the entire plot to save the universe and could have just, you know, sat around and casually chatted for a long time. Maybe this could have been like a Trainspotting type movie, Rick, where there is no real plot. They just wander from scenario to scenario and get into stuff and just have funny conversations. That I would have actually probably enjoyed a lot more.
Well, like sort of like a Quentin Tarantino Pulp Fiction comic book Marvel film. I mean, there's one specific scene which I swear to God, I thought Quentin Tarantino walked on set and directed that scene. It's when Kurt Russell's character, Ego, explains to his son, Star-Lord, what his plot is, like what his mastermind plot, and he does it by using the lyrics of the song that we hear in the background. And plus, it also doesn't help that it's Kurt Russell and he's channeling stuntman Mike from Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof, to the point where it's honest to God the same fucking character.
If he had nachos, then it would have been perfect.
Yeah. Instead, he lives on an egg planet, and like this is supposed to be the most powerful being on the in the universe. He's a god, and his planet is like an egg-shaped planet. Like, I didn't understand what
the hell was
going on.
And he's quoting shitty early 80s folk music, like, as his definitive action towards, you know, this is what's going to define my life, and I'm going to describe it to you using this song that, you know, nobody that is actually going to see this movie in the theater has ever heard of in their life because they're 12.
That's what gods do.
That's right.
Ego's just such a terrible character. I mean, his whole motivation, it's just weird that, like, Star-Lord, Peter Quill, whatever you want to call him, he doesn't even necessarily see, like, the evil that Ego was about to do. It's literally about his mom. That was the only thing that set him off. The whole, I'm going to make the whole universe me type deal didn't mean shit until all of a sudden he put a steamer in his mom's
head.
Clearly,
James Gunn saw Batman versus Superman and was like, all right, moms, I get it. This is what makes superhero stories matter, is the moms.
Yeah.
Can we have the talk around Baby Groot? Can we just talk about it? Because I think this, aside from the many things we've already talked about, this was a big wasted opportunity for this movie to do something really cool.
All right, I want to hear what you think it could have done really cool. I didn't think they wasted Baby Groot. I've never found Groot to be a compelling character anyway.
Okay, so I think there's two things they could have done here. Well, the thing they did was they BB-8ed him. They shoved this fucking character into every corner of every scene of the movie. And whenever there was a moment where they were like, shit, we don't know what to do, they're like, point at the little cute thing in the corner that's going to sell merchandise. And they're like, oh, look, there's Baby Groot. Which, you know, great. Yeah, he's amusing. He's adorable. He's got big puppy eyes. He doesn't wear a seatbelt in the car. Fine, whatever. It's cool. But I think the post-credit scene with Groot showed so much potential for what this movie could have done to make Groot a more compelling character. Like, if this movie had started with Baby Groot, but then by the time we got to the end of the movie, we had fully adult, self-aware Groot again, I think that might have given this movie something to tether itself onto emotionally or just even in terms of humor, rather than the things that it tries to do. Because if there's, we're talking about successful arcs through the movie that are actually meaningful. I mean, maybe we have Rocket Raccoon's half-assed arc or Yondu's redemptive story as our biggest anchors for this film, even though it tries to do other things. And I think if they had a Groot who literally grows up throughout the film, you know, as a lot of these characters are trying to mature as well, you know, Peter Quill realizing that, you know, everybody's got daddy issues and yours aren't any specialer than anyone else's is part of that, you know, the maturation of that. I may be considered special, or the whole first movie Star-Lord's told about what special he is, and then he finds out he's part of this deity, but then you realize that you have your own place in the universe. And I think how they decide to use Groot ultimately sells this movie so short on what it could have tried to do if it wanted to put any effort into it.
But then I think you wanted a completely different movie. And I get what you're saying, and I think that would have been a better film. But this movie, let's be honest, it takes place over a course of like 3 days. You're not going to get Groot grow up in a course of like 3 days. But like the problem, I keep using this word problem, although I do like this movie. The problem with one of the problems with this movie is it kind of feels like it's not detached from the original movie to the point where it still feels like an origin story. Like, we're still developing these characters, their backstories, like who Star-Lord's dad is, like Peter Quill's dad, he finally meets him. We still have this thing with Nebula and her sister Gamora. We still have Drax, you know, in tears about what happened to his family, even though he's not in tears because he can't actually show emotion, but he's trying to show emotion. We still have this thing with Rocket, who is clearly like psychologically damaged because of the experiments that they performed on him to turn him into like whatever he is, like a deranged panda, I think they call him at one point in the movie. But all of these trash panda, but all of these themes, they were there in the first film. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. See, I think there's definitely something to be said about that. I mean, we've all been talking about the problems this movie has, even though we still like it. But the weird thing is that even though I can't really name too many specifics about what I liked about it, it's clear that, like, even though a lot of the elements don't come together very well, they're still good in and of themselves. Like, it's, you know, it's still a likable cast. The jokes can still, you know, elicit laughs from the audience. It's like, it's weird that he has all of these components that don't mesh well together, but at the same time, it wasn't a terrible movie. Like, it still came out as entertaining. It's just, you know, since it tries to do so much.
Dissenter from the sidelines thinks this movie was terrible.
But it's like a boy band. Like you get this band, you know, they find like the four most like beautiful looking boys or something, and they decide to form this band, and all of the songs are written in a specific way. Like, it's all manufactured and packaged. You know what I mean? Like, there's a formula to the music.
Unless it's
right?
making the band.
Right, but no, but there's a formula to Marvel films. Like, you have to have the Stan Lee cameo. And in this case, you have to have not one, but two cameos. And yeah, sure enough, there are some people who chuckled. But, like, I kind of like my Stan Lee cameos when he was just, like, in the background. And if you saw him, you saw him. And if you didn't see him, you didn't see him. Alfred Hitchcock used to do it all the time. But Hitchcock didn't show up in the middle of, like, Psycho, like, having this conversation with three aliens. And, like, I mean, like stuff like that, like... Like, this is my problem with Marvel films. And I'm getting somewhat bored of Marvel films because I know what the formula is before I walk in. I know we're going to get this crazy villain with superpowers that's going to destroy the galaxy or try to. I know we're going to get a Stan Lee cameo. I know we're going to get at least 3, if not 65 post-credit sequences. You know what I mean? Like, there's things that you know you're going to get.
Don't forget your slow down action scene in the middle. Don't forget that. That's a newspaper. You gotta have it.
And you know what's funny? Okay, it is now 2017, and I still think the best Marvel comic book movie was made nearly 20 years ago, and that was the original Spider-Man film and the Spider-Man sequel directed by Sam Raimi.
Yep.
And I honestly think that X-Men 2 is way better than most Marvel films. Like, there are Marvel films that I like. Like, I like the Winter Soldier. I like the first Iron Man movie. Like, I do like these movies to some degree. But, and when I say the batting average is mostly positive, it is. But it's like, you know, it's like if I were to like be rating these movies, you know, if I had to gun to my head, like grade them, I would give most of them like just at like 65.
They're
like
all
barely
B
passing.
Minuses, C plus.
Not even B minuses. That's being too generous. B minus to maybe something like Deadpool that tries to do something different, you know?
I'm with you there. Spider-Man 2 to me is still the best superhero movie, at least of the, like you say, of the last 20 years. For my money, I think I might still go with the original Christopher Reeve Superman. But
I'm talking about Marvel. No, the original Christopher Reeve Superman movie, I think, is in terms of like the comic book superhero characters, I think it's if not the best, then on the top 5 guaranteed.
Yeah,
and I don't think you can count those Sam Raimi movies as quote unquote Marvel movies because that was part of, you know, Sony's Marvel era.
Yeah, I honestly think the exact opposite. Like, I totally agree with you. You do know what you're going to get, Rick, with most of these. Like, you always get a lot of the same elements. But I enjoy that. It's part of why I've watched every Marvel movie. And I think it's also part of why the fan base is so loyal. They can get away with movies that aren't as good because they have these recurring elements. And that's part of why I still watch all of them and why I'm going to follow it through all the way through, you know, phase 3, 4, 5, however many they're going to have. But I enjoy it. I think that knowing what I'm going to get and seeing how they execute it differently is, you know, personally, that's part of why I'm such a big Marvel fan. So it kind of goes both ways. I mean, you could get sick of it, but there are also some people that actually go and are Marvel fans because of it. So I think it can work both in their favor and against them, depending on how they carry it out.
Yeah, Law and Order is like, it's like the Law and Order of film. You know, it's too many goddamn episodes a season. You know you're going to see the same thing over and over again, but you can appreciate the way it's crafted.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, they're not all so.
That's like the boy band analogy I'm saying. Like, you know, you're going to get a song that sounds so similar, reminiscent of a song you heard in the past, but for some reason, you people like this band and they just like the music. It's like people, when you're familiar with something, it feels safe and like people are attracted to it. Like, people don't necessarily like change, and like, including like the people who are pumping money into this movies, like, not only are they afraid of change because they're afraid that their movie won't make money at the box office, but they don't actually like change. And it's like, I don't know, I kind of understand what you're saying, Andrew, but I think that's kind of boring. Like, it honestly is boring. Like, you have this universe, every single movie makes like $1 billion gazillion. Take a chance for once.
Well, that's why they announced a Black Panther movie 5 years before it actually came out. So that way, if there wasn't a super hot reception, they could be like, hey, man, we tried to do something different, but you guys didn't want it.
Well, here, there's some more white people. There's another thing involved with the Marvel movies and why people consistently go to them, I think. And that is because there is a fairly consistent level of quality with these movies. They do get some good filmmakers to do stuff. And granted, they're doing stuff within that formula. But every now and again, you do get excellent movies. I think that The Winter Soldier is actually an excellent movie, period. Forget about it being a Marvel movie. It's a really, really good movie. It could stand alone frankly. But but you still get quality. Like,
but it's not a Marvel film. It's not following a Marvel formula. That's a spy movie. Like, they completely
exactly
look, compare. But it compare is a Marvel first Captain America movie to the first film. They're completely different.
Oh, I know.
That's why I have more respect for.
I mean,
Captain
Winter
America
Soldier
movies.
Is still like a. It's basically the second Avengers movie without the two at the end of it as well.
Well, no, that's Civil War. Civil War is basically the second Winter
oh,
Soldier.
Oh yeah, that's right. Civil War is a Captain America movie. See, there's too many Stan movies.
But the thing is that it still follows a Marvel formula in some ways. You do get that big epic, you know, clash at the end. There are certain things about it, but you're right, it is more of a spy movie. They did take a little bit of a chance with that one, but even all the Marvel movies that follow the regular formula, it's hard to say that too many of them are garbage, because there is at least a certain level of quality behind them.
Oh, I'm not saying they're garbage. I'm just saying they're safe, and sometimes that's boring. Look, the four best comic book movies, in my opinion, are Old Boy, Dark Knight, Akira, and I would put Scott Pilgrim on the top four. And if I had to choose the top five, I would put Spider-Man 2. That's the five best comic book movies, in my opinion. And none of them are part of, like, the Marvel brand. I mean, Spider-Man 2 is based on a Marvel character, but it was Sony that made it, right? Sam Raimi directed that film. And if you look at those movies, look at the directors behind those movies, like Old Boy, you know, Park Chan-wook, Dark Knight, Christopher Nolan.
Wasn't that directed by
Spike
Lee?
Visionary directors, you know?
Yeah, and for my money, definitely Spider-Man 2. I Old Boy, just the whole thing creeps me out. Like, I shudder to even think of that movie. But Spider-Man 2 is definitely up there. I think Winter Soldier belongs in that discussion. I think it's that good of kind of a 70s style thriller. But yeah, I'm not going to say that there are, like, excellent ones. Like I said before, I'm sort of 50-50 on Marvel movies. Like, I can't watch Thor anymore. I can't watch Ant-Man. I did watch Ant-Man, but I don't want to see another one. Some of them just don't bite me, but I do recognize that they have enough quality there that for people who do like those, they're not going to be let down by that. And so I can see why people who enjoy these characters and enjoy these kind of romps continue to go back, because they've never really dropped off too far into, you know, garbage territory. They're all fairly well crafted. And, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is no different. It's got talent behind it. You can see the talent in certain scenes. It's just that it's kind of a convoluted mess because Gunn tried to do too much, ultimately.
Yeah, on Marvel's side of things, on DC's side of things, there's
that's
a lot
another
of
story.
A lot of garbage.
DC's got two shitty universes they're trying to keep together, TV and film.
Right, but the last thing I'm going to say is I went to the movies, I went with my nephew, and this family sat next to me, and so there was like three kids who sat next to me to the right of me, and to the left of me was my nephew, right? My nephew's now 18. The point is, so I'm sitting next to these like three kids, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm thinking they're going to annoy me while I'm watching the movie, they're not going to stop talking, so I'm already like dreading my experience at the movie theater, and the kids were well behaved, but I will say that sitting next to those three kids made me enjoy the movie a lot more, because they could not stop laughing. So I kind of feel like, you know, I like space operas, and let's face it, there's not many good space opera movies. A lot of space operas are just cheesy as hell, you know? Like, I mean, I like my Flash Gordon and Barbarella, but you know, compared to Guardians of the Galaxy, like, there's just something about space opera movies. Like, you expect, je ne sais quoi, like, this cheese to it, right?
Like Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah, I like that movie. I like that
but
movie.
But that's because it leans into its own cheese.
Exactly.
Heavily.
But so the thing is, I kind of feel like, you know, for this generation of like kids, like Guardians of the Galaxy, like this series is going to be like huge for like when they grew up, they're going to remember these movies fondly, just like we remember Indiana Jones or Star Wars or Back to the Future or whatever it is, like, you know, that we watched.
Or none
kids.
Of them, because they'll keep bringing them back and keep ruining them all. Aren't you excited for the next Indiana Jones movie?
I actually am. I'm always excited to see Harrison Ford and Steven Spielberg team up.
Only if there's a shark in the movie.
I quit.
I'm nostalgic. I'll go see Indiana Jones anywhere. But yeah, I think Rick's right. I think it's hard to look at it through the eyes of those kids. But yeah, I think they will. There is enough entertainment there that I can see this, you know, burning itself into a 13-year-old's brain. That character is basically exactly what I probably would have wanted to see when I was 13. I don't necessarily want to see it now, but it also wasn't so bad. You know, I've seen way worse summer blockbusters than Guardians of the Galaxy Vol.
Put it
2.
On the DVD cover. I've seen way worse. Patrick Murphy.
And, you know, I was half entertained by this thing. Like I said, I could listen to these people talk to each other for a whole movie. I could have done without the half an hour space battle, which was mind-numbingly boring at the end. But the rest of it, yeah, I think I could listen to them just sort of BS because and just yell at each other and bicker with each other all day long because they do have some chemistry and there is some funny stuff in there. Gunn can write some witticisms fairly well, and he does know how to stage scenes well enough sometimes when the focus is small. It's when he goes big that everything falls apart. But when he keeps the focus relatively tight, like that opening credit scene where it is just one long shot and the action is all in the background, totally blurry. It's almost like you're not even meant to be pay attention to the action, which I wish the rest of the screenplay would have followed suit. But he knows how to sort of stage stuff like that, and I could be entertained in enough spots to essentially recommend this to somebody.
If I touch someone, I can feel their feelings.
You feel love.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I feel a general unselfish love for just about everybody.
No, sexual love.
No, I don't.
For her.
No.
She just told everyone your deepest, darkest secret.
Dude, come on. I think you're overreacting a little bit.
You must be so embarrassed.
One last thing I want to note. That's just this is the last thing I'm going to shit on this movie for. I promise.
I want to hear what you like about this movie. There must be.
You
one
were talking thing. About the things that James Gunn does well and doesn't do well, and the first thought that came to mind was the thing that he does not do well is try to establish a flirtatious rapport between two characters, because some of the shit that comes out of Star-Lord's mouth when he's trying to talk to Gamora in this movie is like a desperate 15-year-old trying to get a prom date, and it's some of the most pathetic shit, dialogue I've heard in a movie of this type in a long time. His attempts to be like, oh, you know, there's something going on here, was just so desperately Sam and Diane-ing their relationship in a way that haunted me in my sleep last night and still does to this day.
The unspoken thing or whatever they called it.
Yeah, it was such petty little poke you in the side, like, I'm going to be an annoying little 14-year-old about it and touch you until you like me.
Yeah, but,
kind of thing.
You know, that's the character, though. I thought it was totally appropriate. I mean, I get what you're saying, and it did get annoying towards the end, but at the same time, like, Peter Quill is like that. I mean, it's the same reason why I like Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man a lot better than Andrew Garfield's, is he just played the part better. Because, you know, Andrew Garfield is too socially aware. Like, Spider-Man's supposed to be awkward. He's supposed to be nerdy, and he's supposed to be a loser. Tobey Maguire does that well. And in the same way, I think, you know, Chris Pratt does a good job with that childish kind of... He goes after the boyish charm because it's appropriate to the character. I thought it works.
He makes borderline harassment be cute in a way. It's like in the movie Passengers, where he wakes up a woman out of sleep because he's lonely.
I don't think it's quite that bad, Randy, in this. I don't know if it's borderline harassment. He was trying to be flirtatious, and it was just came off a little bit.
Maybe
awkward.
Again, it's just a matter of the performance that makes the, you know, maybe it's just a combination of subpar dialogue and not a great performance. Because if there's anything besides poor Karen Gillian, who I love, but her performance in this movie is awful. If there's anything that I despised more than any scene where Nebula had to express anger or discontent with something, it was when Star-Lord was trying to flirt.
See, I'm going to agree with Andrew, disagree with you, Randy. I don't think the problem with the movie has anything to do with the characters. I think the characters are fine because that's what they are. I think the problem with the movie is the overall plot, shoving in Kurt Russell's character Ego and the comic timing. I think those are the three major problems with this film. But all in all, I do think this movie is worth the $40 I put down instead of my two tickets, plus the popcorn and stuff. This movie was expensive for me, guys. But
all right. I want to, before we cut this out, because I think three of us are essentially saying this movie is okay and one person hates it, we do have to go through...
No names.
What did you like? Name something specifically, Andrew, you go first, that you liked.
I think the best thing about this movie, honestly, is just the fact that it was the entertainment value was there. Like, there were a lot of elements that it tried to do, but you were still able to see past it and enjoy the movie. It was enjoyable. It was worth the money that I paid for it. Honestly, I loved seeing the way that, you know, Baby Groot started it off. It set me up for the rest of the movie. That, you know, I mean, sure, it fell off the longer the movie went on, but it was still enjoyable. It was something that I didn't regret seeing or spending money on, which, you know, it's a far cry from that. It definitely falls short of what I expected, but at the same time, it was a decent movie. I'm glad I went to go see it, and it fits in with the rest of, you know, it fits in with the rest of the Marvel universe. So it's not terrible. It's hard to say anything particularly particularly specific that I enjoyed, but it's just that as a movie, I had fun, and that's the whole point. Like, that's why you go see a movie, is to be entertained, and I think it did that well.
All right, Rick, what about you?
As a form of entertainment, you're right, Andrew, it did entertain me, although at times it did put me to sleep, mostly, again, the action sequences. Like Patrick, you said that the third act with the big, huge, bombastic action sequence was kind of like dull. But I think my favorite part of the movie is Michael Rooker's character. I think Michael Rooker is the most, the best performer in this film. I liked his character. I wish they did more to develop his character arc, and I wish they did not kill him. That was incredibly disappointing, but it is good for what you expect it to be good for, which is the characters themselves, because they're just fun characters. I would prefer to watch Rocket, Groot, and or Drax over Iron Man and Captain America. That's just me.
All right, Randy, you got to come up with something. I've given you some time to think here.
I didn't think it's really that hard for me to pick out the things that I do like about this movie. I think if I were to be one of those douchebags that edits down movies on YouTube, I could make a 15-minute film out of this that I really enjoyed. I think this is quite a prerequisite for a comment. I think when this movie steps away from its spectacle and its sense of self-importance and the cultural, you know, this movie kind of really knows its cultural place and appeal in a way that's really kind of unsatisfying to me. I think when this movie gets farther away from the spectacle and pauses, and like really truly pauses, not in these moments where it's like trying to build something for the future, like this stupid Star-Lord and Gamora relationship. When this movie really pauses in the few moments it tries to, like there's one scene with Drax and Mantis that we get, and there's another one, the one I mentioned with Gamora and Nebula, which again I don't think is super well executed, but the intention is there that when this movie, it stops to explore these characters, like understanding the limitations of like who they are and what it means to be a part of this quote unquote family of the Guardians of the Galaxy. I think there's some strong material here. I just think it gets buried under everything else that this movie does. There's certainly a version of this film I could see myself enjoying more. I just wish that there was less time being enamored with what Guardians of the Galaxy means and more time exploring what that can mean.
Well, for me, I'm going to say like the plot is completely inconsequential to me in a movie like this. And it was definitely, it was really inconsequential in this movie. I was about to, you know, was there really much of a plot? I don't think so. But I was able to get by on the humor and on some clever scenes. I kind of liked, we've already brought up the Michael Rooker scene, the Yondu scene with the magic arrow, which I think is really well done. I also enjoyed Rocket's little prank, you know, traps that he played on the Ravagers in that forest planet. I thought that had some good physical comedy in it. There are things like that. And also, I just think this is a fun movie to look at, too. There are a lot of colors. It's got a lot of fantastical stuff. And I think that the art direction was pretty well executed in this film. There are some wonky things with their technology that make absolutely no sense. And, you know, we actually had an article at Goombastop about that, about form and function of, you know, design in prop design in movies like this. It's no Blade Runner in that respect, but I do still like the look of the film. I think there was enough there to at least keep my eyes interested, if not engage my brain, which was almost never interested. That's enough sometimes. Sometimes that is enough. And for me, this time it was. And with that, I think we should probably wrap it up. It sounds like 3 out of 4 are okay with this movie, but definitely not in love with it. Randy clearly hates it. And you can directly.
Randy has no soul and is barely a human being.
Randy, I feel good that you kind of took my place on this podcast of being the guy that hates the movie so much. So that,
you know,
was
they
fun.
Bring me in for the tough assignments.
That was fun for me. All right. And speaking of which, Randy, where can we find you online?
Well, I am the TV editor at Goombasomp, so you can always find me writing about stuff at Goombasomp. I wrote some stuff about American Gods recently. I'm also on Twitter at RJDank.
All right, sounds good. And Andrew, what about you?
For me, it's just Goombasomp. You can find a few of my stuff on there. I've only been at it for a few months, but, you know, Facebook also, facebook.com/Keone97. And, yeah, that's about it.
Sounds good. And Rick, where can they find the podcast? And is there anything going on at Goombasomp that everybody should be aware of?
We can find me on Twitter. I handle the official Twitter account for Goombasomp, which is Goombasomp Mag. Like us on Facebook, Tumblr. And in terms of like the website, well, we just wrapped up Star Wars Week. We're going to be doing sort of like a week-long look at the Alien franchise. And this month, not all the writers, but a lot of writers are writing about games that changed their lives. Sort of like personal, interesting pieces about video games that they've played that either made them like a huge gamer and or helped them while they were going through a hard time in life and or something, you know. So it's interesting. Like, I'm actually having a lot of fun reading them because you get to know more about our crew, our staff. So
yeah, those are pretty good. I've enjoyed reading those as well, and I'm trying to think of what mine will be so that I can actually write one. But I think I have it. I think I'm going to finally be able to pump it out, and it's one nobody will pick, I guarantee. And you can find me, I guess, on Twitter sometimes at NExpressNintendo, which is the Twitter handle for one of our other podcasts that Rick and I do, the NExpress Nintendo podcast. And other than that, you can find me on Goombasomp writing movie reviews, including one for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So go check that out. And that should do it for today's show. We look forward to coming back next week.
In a little cafe, just the other side of the border, she was sitting there giving me looks that made my mouth water. So I started walking her way. She belonged to Batman Jose. And I knew, yes, I knew I should leave when I heard her say, hey, come a little bit closer, you're my kind of man, so big and so strong. Come a little bit closer, I'm all alone, and the night is so long. So we started to dance in my arms, she felt so enlightened. The cafe was empty.